Hey everybody, welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 56, part 2.
Hey folks, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, it's part 2. We left off talking about politics in New Orleans. We got the mayor's race coming up. We were talking a little bit about candidates that are in the field. We didn't really get into it that much, but
we have 18 candidates, everybody.
Yeah, there's like 18 candidates. There was a little flood, a mini flood of candidates that all went and qualified like Thursday and Friday.
Which some were loose cannons.
Yeah, some loose cannons. You know,
I'm not really excited about
unsavories.
I'm not excited about
this. There's
not this.
There's not a lot of choice, I don't think.
Is there anybody in there, Joel? Because I haven't seen. Look. Here's your leaders right now. It's Michael Bagnaris, Desiree Charbonnet,
yep,
and LaToya Cantrell.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
No, yeah, that's it.
No, I'm super curious, and I'm gonna botch this unless I can pull up the internet quick enough.
Then they have some wingnuts in
there. No, there's a cat who ran against Landrieu in 2010.
Oh,
who,
Troy.
Oh, Troy Carter. Yeah.
Troy Carter is a guy that I'm extremely interested in learning more about. I want to get to know him, sit down with him.
He was the District C council person for a while.
Right. And he ran against Landrieu. By all accounts, from a few people that I know that know him, he's super sharp.
Really?
Yep. So I'm kind of curious about him. I want to sit down and get to know him.
He might be playing from behind a little bit because he's had some political defeats. Like, you know, he didn't really make a... He didn't make a splash the last time he ran.
You know the interesting thing? He didn't. He got trounced by Landrieu. But I was the second to last person to be qualified for, because I got there like, it was a 3-day period, and it closed at 4:30 on a Friday. Started Wednesday morning at 8 a.m.
Yep.
I got there at 3:30 on Friday.
See, I would have been scared. Because
Troy came in after me.
He came in after you.
He was the loudest second to last. That's my brother right there, bro.
That might have been his whole thing.
Yeah, he got a little attention.
So he might be in good company.
Exactly, I think I am.
With somebody who got trounced.
Well, yeah.
The last one.
Landrieu was a little bit of a, you know, he was a little bit of a tsunami last time around.
I mean, nobody was going to beat him in the last... I mean, Bagnaris ran against him in the runoff, and he was the only guy that was even remotely competitive. And Bagnaris, I mean, whatever you want to say about him, he's just like an old guy. He's old.
Yeah.
He's just an old dude who's been around forever. He's been trying to be mayor for fucking, I don't know how long, 16 years or something like that, you know? And he's trying again. And he was a judge... I mean, it's just not that exciting. You know what I mean? It's not. I mean, this. It's kind of typical.
Well, remember, wasn't it
New Orleans?
Wasn't it? What's your boy's name? Carville. Remember when Carville was talking about this was last election, before Landrieu threw his name in? Because Landrieu got stomped by Nagin, and then this. So he already had lost. So it was almost like, well, you know, should I even try again?
He got stomped by Nagin when Nagin ran for re-election. He didn't get stomped.
No, well, he didn't get stomped, but he lost.
No, but he lost, right.
But when there was talks, because who was the other guy that was, there was another guy that couldn't.
That was when the white people voted for Nagin.
On
State Street.
Because
they were like, Landrieu's a communist who talks about Ray Nagin as Ray Reagan or something like that, because he called Ray Nagin Ray Reagan, right? And that made the white people over by Loyola University vote for Ray Nagin,
right? Because he called him Ray Reagan.
Yep, and that's what put Nagin over the top. That's
but who was the other guy that was? He couldn't.
It's Troy Henry, by the way.
Troy Henry?
Yeah, it's not Troy Carter. Troy Henry.
Troy Carter was
No, you're right. We're talking about two different people.
Oh, I'm your guy.
Troy
Henry.
Okay. My guy is Troy Henry.
Ah,
I knew that didn't ring a bell.
All right. All
Troy Henry is a younger guy who is making, let's see, he's a certified, I don't know what, I think he's a consultant of some sort, but I hear he's whip smart. Troy Henry. He's a young dude. He came in just after me.
Maybe he'll maybe he'll make an impact.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You never know. I would say that this race in my lifetime is the most wide open that I've ever seen.
But it's also kind of boring right now.
It seems like it is now, but now suddenly I have a glimmer of hope. Like, well, because this is what happens. Like, you remember that this was the same kind of atmosphere that allowed for Nagin.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Because you had a bunch of people where it was like, what? I think even Troy Carter was like, Pennington was running. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, I don't know. Do we want that guy or this one? Like, you don't feel strong.
And everybody was connected to somebody. Yeah.
When you don't feel strongly about anybody as a lead candidate at the very beginning of the election, it means that people have some wiggle room to get in there and to make some and make some waves, like Joel Jackson, by the way. JJ for DD can get in there because his opponent in the race, there's what, four people running now in District D, and Jared Brossett, who is the incumbent, is a first-term incumbent.
Right.
Right, who
he's
ran...
He's like 32 years old.
Yeah.
He's never done anything outside of politics.
That's right.
Including in university. He was like a politician-type dude.
At university, right.
You know, he's just never done anything but this, which is fine.
How is that possible? What was he before that? He was a state representative?
I think he was, yeah. I think so.
Huh. Wow.
And it's maybe serve with some other people.
Hey, who was the representative city councilwoman for District D for a long time before Brossett? Like, you and I videotaped her, like, many times. Yeah. Remember what I'm talking about?
Cynthia Willett-Lewis was E.
That was it.
She's E, though, right? What was the East?
She was E.
What's East?
The East is District D, right?
D. Is it D?
Yeah.
Where's Spencer when you need him?
Yeah, I know. We need Spencer. Anyway.
Sure do.
Point being, here's the thing. The seat was occupied before Brossett took it over by a very ingrained political family in New Orleans. And she ran against Stacey Head for the at-large council.
She got a little too big for her britches.
No, I don't think she did. Yeah. I think that just it was the waning days of the, like, the white politicians who were coming into the Katrina vacuum.
Right.
And Stacey had just had the tiniest sliver of support that put her over the top. She barely edged out that race. And now she's term limited at this point. Stacey Head.
Yeah.
But she's also kind of like, just like, fuck this.
Can I make an observation? You know, it's a wide open political race season? Because look, it's not just the mayoral race. It's also the city council race. You got a guy like me running, right?
Yeah.
I was so thrilled that these other two cats, and I'm going to make a larger point in general, but I was so thrilled that these two cats joined the race because they're dudes who are less qualified than even me. You know what I'm saying?
It's the guy that works at Target.
It's the Target receiving clerk, and it's this Mardi Gras Indian dude.
Yeah.
And here's what I love about going. I'm looking at all the city council people who are running. There are more nicknames and quotes on the official ballots than probably any other city in the country.
Do you have JJ on
maybe
the ballot?
Detroit. I should have JJ for DD. But you got in my district, District D, you've got Belden, quote, Noonie Man, unquote, Batiste. So I'm going up against the Batiste, folks. That's a big name.
That's a big name.
Noonie Man. And you got T, in quotes, Thad, Casabone.
Casabone.
So you got that. You got Aaron Ace Christopher in the at-large Division B. You got Eldon Deloyd L, in quotes, Anderson.
Yeah, you need to go with JJ, man.
You should just.
I gotta get the quotes.
Can you call them and just say, hey,
change it?
Put JJ in quotes.
Joel JJ Jackson.
Joel JJ Jackson.
I didn't realize I could put my nickname in.
You got Andre.
Can I revise my ballot?
You got Andre, quote unquote, Action Andre Strummer.
See,
Andre Action Andre Strummer, dog.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, no, you gotta think about your marketing.
Dude, it's so great, man. You know it's a wide open race with all the nicknames, bro. You got Ernest Freddie Charbonnet.
Look, I don't understand why you wouldn't try to revise that. I think you need to do that.
Yeah. I just need to call up the Secretary of State and put a JJ in there.
Yeah, just tell him. Just because, look, JJ you already DD. Joel JJ. Your thing is already JJ for DD.
Should I do Joel JJ for DD Jackson?
No, yes. not for DD. Just JJ.
No, just JJ.
Yeah, because that
Joel JJ Jackson. Because
it's got to live with your brand for the rest look of the time.
I mean, that's like doubling down on the alliteration. It's doubling Joel down. JJ Jackson.
Yeah. It should have just been JJ Jackson.
Dude, it should have been JJ Jackson.
Damn it, man. Exactly. I need a time machine, bro.
This is what happens when you go to the second to last guy.
Exactly, dude. So, yeah. You posed a question, Randy.
Yeah, so
What do you want out of your marriage? Yeah.
Without, like, going, like, into specific, not going into specific issues, but, like, I want somebody that, like, is looking to create solutions to things and seeing them as potential benefits, like whether it's like reform with police or it can be anything from sidewalk repair or coastal issues, any kind of things where we could figure out somebody that's smart, somebody that's traveled a lot, that sees how other cities work, and that how for us it's like if you're not a political affiliated family, like,
and those people who are politically affiliated with families have never left outside of vacation New Orleans.
Well, I'm not saying that they haven't left out for vacation.
I'm saying they haven't. Like, I spent 10 years in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah,
and I spent 3 years in D.C.
And that's,
so I've seen how other municipalities work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, it's like a lot of these like in trenched families that like it has been in the past, and I'm not saying anything about these future these candidates, but in the past it seems like it was always about their brand, their handful of people that they wanted to represent or whatever, right. It is their whether it's brother-in-laws or whatever it is.
Sure.
It was always a joke in this town. It's like, oh yeah, my brother-in-law has got a fence building company, so now all of a sudden we got to redo all the fences on the
there's not a lot of grassroots people getting involved in the actual grist mill of running for office, other than this handful of of very clicky political machines,
yeah,
that are, and then these outliers,
and then I know that's what I'm saying,
it's the two things.
You would be an outlier if you're just not in that milieu.
Well, exactly. But these are like the far-flung outliers. Unfortunately, like, Nagin was an outlier, mm-hmm. that made a lot of sense at the time.
Dude, you're a far-flung outlier.
Yeah, you are.
I am. But Nagin was like not a far. He was just an outlier. And he was, I think the appeal of Nagin when he first ran was that he was a business person who was not what you just described.
Yeah.
The appeal that Nagin had, which was kind of unique, and I've pointed this out to people, which is weird, that we have never, ever, like, if you go back and look at where the mayor of New Orleans comes from, typically, right? It's either the city council of New Orleans or the state House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, you have to be in one of those two bodies to get elected. Sure. As mayor of New Orleans. That is the traditional way that the mayor of New Orleans has been elected. The one person who really bucked that of all the people was Ray Nagin.
Right.
But here's the thing. He was a local kid made good.
Yeah.
Right? And he ran Cox.
Yeah.
And then it was like, so he had a measure of respect. And the funny thing about him is that, and you and I dealt with him back then, is like, there was a lot of appeal to Ray Nagin, right off the bat.
Totally, there was.
Well, he had a lot of great ideas.
Now, but he was a superstar.
He got
middle aged, educated white dudes.
You got to think about it this way. Like, years ago, like, I mean, now, like, I deal with City Hall all the time, like trying to get permits for my house and stuff. And people, like, I tell them, like, oh, I got to go to City Hall. They're like, oh, Jesus, you're gonna have to be there for all day. I'm in and out. There's never any time that I've dealt with for various permits or paying taxes or whatever it is. I'm in and out of City Hall. And at one point, that wasn't the case.
True.
And, I know.
And
I know.
Nagin, one of the biggest things that came on with Nagin was...
He helped facilitate that.
And it was a situation where people were like, he ran a communication company. And people were like, well, let's get these computers to actually work. Because, you know, there was the whole thing of like, let's just buy a computer and it works. And it, and whatever reason, the systems weren't connecting.
It's not networked to a server.
Yeah, and it just wasn't... It was just backwards and things just... I mean, you couldn't pay a traffic ticket without sitting in line and wasting the whole day.
I hate to say this, but like one of the things that they had as his agenda was that the city didn't even have a fucking website, man. Like anything that could be functionally called a website. It was just a website that said, "Hey, City of New Orleans, how you doing?
Here's our address.
Here's our address.
And here's our phone number.
And a phone number. Call us."
Nagin.
There's no functionality to it. And one of the guys that he got in trouble with, which was the technology guy, was the guy they put it into place.
Yeah.
That's the irony in the whole thing.
That is the irony.
He actually competently made a functional website for the City of New
Orleans.
And also, this
is a little bit of an anecdote, but he started doing open contracts like for the first time in terms of government business. And my buddy, David Humphreys, who's an audio installer, kind of an engineer guy, won the bid. Mm-hmm. You know, wasn't like a family thing, wasn't an uncle thing, wasn't a friend of a friend. So he goes in to do the audio in like where the city council does their thing, right? For the like the video shoots or whatever that goes out on public television or whatever, cable access or whatever it is.
Right.
And he gets there and there's no plans of what currently exists. There's no contracts of who did the work before him. He had to just start drilling through concrete, man, to figure out where wires were run. Because that's the way the city did fucking business, man. That's the way the politicians did business. Some dude got paid a lot of money to come do a bunch of shit that was off the books.
Yeah.
So there were no plans. There was no contract. There was no floor plan.
Yeah.
And he had to deal with that mess by just fucking eating up concrete.
Slowly by turns, things are starting to get away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you go to the airport. You've been to the airport a lot recently. Like, the airport is, like, slowly changing, finally, from being this, like... I mean, look.
But they probably spent $250,000 on furniture that's going to last a year.
It's also a thing that we just... How much... What was like, $180 million or whatever they're redoing a terminal and then like
they're expanding one terminal.
No, but it was like they rebuilt one whole terminal.
Right.
And the Delta terminal, what is it, G or I think it's G. I don't know, whatever it is. And they put in some new food stuff. I mean, it's still kind of, you know, it's got that one little area where it's like an atrium and is like a a Zataran.
Dude, it's still
place.
Super chintzy.
No, but the point...
It looks like you're in the 1970s.
No, but the point still, is...
It's brand new. And it's like you walked into your parents' den when you were 9 years
old.
My age.
But the thing that sucks about it is they spent that money and not a few months after they, you know, kind of released it, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to build a whole new airport. And this is not going to be part of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like... Why did they spend that money? It's like
it's fucking retarded,
because like that.
No one can see beyond the.
Well, but also
thing that's right in
but
front
there's
of them
more to it than that. But it's because like that plan for that expansion was like 5-6 years in the works and had a bunch of people attached to it, and then the other plan that you're talking about had a whole nother team of people attached to it. How it happens.
Did you see? There was a couple of packages of. Of people that were bidding to be like the merchants in the new airport, and like one of them, I think the one that won has like a Brother's gas station in it, like one of, like
oh
Brother's chicken.
Oh my god!
Jesus!
Oh my god! Really? That's so disheartening, man. But I gotta tell you,
but it's
something.
Like, you shoot low. It's like
you gotta.
Nothing's wrong with Brother's.
I know.
I don't want it in a gas station.
Like, who's coming to the airport? You know, like it's not like all just a bunch of New Orleanians, man. You know, like rolling through. Like, oh, let me get some Brother's chicken. You know, and on the red eye.
But do we talk about the Nashville airport a lot, man? And like they, and I think you could say the same thing about the Portland, Oregon airport. There's clearly a concerted effort, like being. I mean. Concerted, but also in concert between the airport folks and the city and businesses to brand the airport appropriately as part of the city. Like when you're in the Portland airport or the Nashville airport, you know exactly where you're fucking at. You know, outside of the fucking Lucky Dog hot dog stand, man, you don't really get that in New Orleans.
Well, in Austin, I think we're
one of the most New Orleans branded. I mean, the New Orleans brand is all over that airport.
The brand.
It's ridiculous, man. I mean, it is. Like, you get these, like, homespun food outlets there where it's like, hey, you want a chicken jambalaya, you know, whatever, you know, like.
What is a Dookie Chase?
Red beans and rice.
There's a Dookie Chase.
You want some red beans and rice on your way out on your 8-hour flight?
But like, Austin's airport is awesome. And in there, you walk out and it's like, motherfuckers playing country music.
That's what I'm saying. Nashville's the same way. They have a live stage. They have basically what equates to any better than any music museum that we have in New Orleans and the whole city.
We don't have a music museum.
No, we don't.
What music museum is
that? Yeah,
which one are you talking about?
Yeah, we don't.
We got nothing.
What's
the closest thing we have? The Backstreet Museum?
We have a museum that isn't open to the public.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dave Kunin runs it.
Which we love Dave Kunin, but oddly enough, we're like, That's such
a... It's an archival museum, not open.
It's not even an archive. It is.
You see all those photos, he wears the gloves. That means he's archived.
I know. It's so...
It's dust free.
It's so weird.
No, exactly. There's no placards. And I mean, there's a few, I guess. But like, you know...
Dude, this is what I've been arguing, man, is that the Municipal Auditorium should be... The New Orleans.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea.
The Municipal Auditorium should be the Museum of New Orleans Music.
Mm. Boom.
It's perfect.
Jeff,
space.
What do you want out of a mayor?
I want the mayor to come forward and immediately say the Municipal Auditorium is going to be the Museum of New Orleans Music.
Can I add something?
This is my first project. Because you need a big social project, like as a Democrat,
fucking you need to come
in,
dude.
Because it's owned by the city, right?
Yep.
That's what you do. You come in, and you're like, the very first thing I'm going to talk, we talk about crime and this and that and that and that, but I'm going to make a big splash by using money to make a museum out of this building that nobody can figure out what to do with.
I'm putting that on my platform, bro.
And that creates a vision.
No, that's brilliant,
right?
You know, let me add real quick, because I said that you know, I was talking about that we don't have a lot of like historical like markers or whatever, but I don't know if I don't want to talk out of my neck.
Do you mean historical markers?
Well, you know, like, I mean, we have historical markers, but we don't have like a museum.
We talked about with Jen O'Dell the other podcast about we don't memorialize our cultural
heritage. Exactly. But I did want to add that I think it's Offbeat. I may be wrong who I'm crediting this for, but there's a website. I think it's called Walking in New Orleans. Or something
I don't know.
But it's an interactive website that basically can give you, it's like self-guided tours, I guess, and it has information things of like, oh, you know, Professor Longhair lived here, this is what a dewdrop in is, and this is what it means.
Right.
So it's actually really cool. It would be something that would be in your municipal auditorium, exactly. New Orleans Museum.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like,
you could just get the headset. The
headset and
that you go around.
Yeah, like an iPad thing that you
read
while you're going
That's
through.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
So anyway,
Chris Rose takes you through there and gives you a tour.
Yeah. I just didn't want to not credit anybody.
He's on the cover of New Orleans Magazine or whatever.
Oh, really?
It's Chris Rose, the tour guide. I just saw the New Orleans Monthly. What's the New Orleans Monthly? The Slick Magazine.
New Orleans.
Yeah,
New Orleans, it's called New Orleans. Yeah, New Orleans Magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's on. He's not on the cover.
Who buys that shit?
I don't. Well, I mean, I think dentists. Dentists.
I mean, you know, I'm glad they're in business and stuff.
Veterinarians.
I'm just curious.
You know.
I mean,
people
cool.
that need something for people to read.
Definitely a dentist.
I see it as on the
golf clubs.
I see it as a magazine that sells on the other side of Canal Street.
Hey, what was that? What was that magazine that came out before? It was like 97 or 98, called like Backstreet, and it was long.
It's Jay Mazza.
Who was that?
Jay Mazza did the Backstreet.
Oh, really?
Magazine.
I still have every episode or all the ones I can get.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Friend of the pod.
Amazing.
Yeah,
he runs Mom's Ball, and he's like,
really?
He,
I didn't know.
He wrote a book. Yeah. He wrote a book called Up Front and Center, because if you go to any freaking New Orleans music festival, he's right up against the
dude. That magazine was.
You know, Steve Novak, the guy who's going to provide our bus for the Get on the Bus for JJ for DD, he was the publisher of that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that was a great...
I think he kind of bankrolled it, and then Jay Mazza was the editor-in-chief and did all the writing. It was great.
No, it was a great
movie. I agree. It was fantastic.
We miss those things.
I know, man. It's hard to have good things. Why can't we have good things?
Well, you got podcasts. That's
well,
cool.
You know, I mean, we got this podcast right now.
Yeah, you're right.
And the thing is that stuff starts to change when you talk about it. And if people, I mean, that's the truth, man. It's like we talk about it on this podcast. I know this, that some of the stuff you're talking about in your campaign, we know from like you taking Uber and talking to people in the neighborhood that the whole camera thing is on everybody's mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And we already talked about the fact that like nobody talks about it as a politician.
People think I'm crazy for running.
They know they come from those political families and they know how much money it raises. And so they don't want to take it off the table.
Exactly. And a lot of people in this district are like looking at me like, "You're a white dude running in this district? What the fuck are you thinking?" And it's like, "Man, this traffic camera issue is not white or black, bro."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it affects everybody.
I think it's such a resonant issue.
Plus, my second biggest issue.
It's such a resonant
issue. Over-incarceration, man.
The over-incarceration is ridiculous.
It's a big one. Yeah. So,
what would
be the living wage. Go ahead.
What would be some of the things you're looking for in your mayor besides the municipal auditorium turning to a museum?
I like the big splash, though.
No, that's great.
Well, I mean,
what kind of qualities?
I do want someone who is who's going to be more in touch with how people live in this town instead of how rich people live in this town, how regular people live in New Orleans, and who has an eye toward alleviating the pressure and the burdens that are being placed on those people by city government. Because to me, I'm a firm believer in this, that I don't believe at all in like federal government interference and all that freaking suburban right-wing paranoia and that people think that the federal government is interfering in life. I think that it's the reverse of that. It's that municipal governments interfere with your life far more than the federal government or even the state government, for crying. I mean, municipal governments are just up in your face all the time because municipal governments need money. And the easiest way to get it is to shake the till, you know, grab you by your ankles, turn you upside down, and shake some money out of your pockets, you know? And unfortunately, I mean, I hate to get back to this issue, but I mean, it just seems like there are so many issues to talk about in New Orleans, but I know this for a fact, that people in this town they're just fed up to their ears with the frickin' automobile fining stuff that has been going on and has been promoted relentlessly by the Landrieu administration. And I would gladly endorse somebody who would be on the Joel Jackson platform of reducing that as an oppressive force on people's pocketbooks all the time, because it causes people to do things that are kind of like crazy. Like, you know, it just causes so many bad
stress,
things.
Bad driving.
Oh, I fuck up my credit, you know, because, you know, I got a fine and this and that. Like, the fines are outrageous. It's too much. There's too many. It's too prevalent. You can't go anywhere without getting one.
Most of it's not about safety.
The only sensible thing to do is to ride a bicycle.
And look, I'm a data-driven dude. I mean, one of the things that's going to come out in my campaign, and we'll get back to you, Jeff, on your thoughts about your wish list for a mayoral candidate. But I'm a metrics nerd, and one of the things I'm always going to come back to is, okay, where are we having traffic accidents? Which intersections? Let's look at the data, and let's put a cop on the fucking ground. Our cops need to be in the community anyway. Let's just put a cop there. If you run a red light, you get pulled over the old-fashioned way.
Hey, and that's the way that it was, you know. And then what happened was that some company said technology can do away with this quote unquote inefficiency and free up your labor force to do more law enforcement. But that isn't what happens.
Nope.
At all. What happens is people pitch that to municipalities who are interested in buying that stuff, but with a wink and a nod saying like, yeah, that's what it does.
Well, part of the sales pitch is...
But it's also going to raise your revenue by, you know, $25 million a year, depending on your population.
And the sales pitch is that it's free money because those guys, because of the percentage of the money that they're going to get from those tickets, they give you all those. They give you the cameras. They do the installation. They give you the hardware.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They come in and do all of it. Right.
And you don't spend a dime. And all you do is get money. It's hard to say no to that. Except, you know what? Let's fucking do what we were talking about earlier, which is let's get the right people, the right leaders from the right types of communities and groups in our town, and let's figure out how to make some money.
I know, but I mean the problem with it, I understand that from a convenience standpoint.
Let's be the best sidewalk builders in America.
It's just oppressive. It's oppressive.
Let's be the best sidewalk. We should be people in New Orleans. There should be companies in New Orleans who can tell you how to fucking get roots out of a fucking sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
We should export that shit to all over the fucking country.
We should be the best sidewalk root extraction company in the world.
Exactly.
Should come from this town.
Should come from this town.
Exactly.
So Jeff, let me ask you a question.
The best pothole filling company
the best sinkhole
should come from
sinkhole detection. We should know how to detect sinkholes before they happen.
All right, what you got?
So
the UNO program, the sinkhole program at University of New Orleans.
As a a native New Orleanian, what do you have? Are you optimistic about the future of the city?
Great question.
Yeah, from
because I feel like there's a lot of like pessimism floating around lately.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's because of things that are happening nationally and internationally, as well as what's happening locally. Plus, it's the summer, so that's rough. But
you know, it's funny that you say that. We've talked about when you talk about that issue, you got to talk about like the root things. I think culturally in New Orleans that we know as that keep this what we know as New Orleans moving along with continuity through time, right? And we've talked about it a lot on the show. Like, we've had music writers on the show. I always bring this up, like, every single time. Where it's like, okay, so we know that there's like this band, that band, the other band that are doing like hip stuff that is likely or not to be forgotten in like 3 or 4 years, right? And somehow I'm just going with music now, right? But if we talk about cultural cornerstones in New Orleans, we're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about food. We're going to talk about street life, second lines, things of that nature.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it. Art, other things as well. But you know, let's just talk about music. Man, you know, like second line culture and brass band culture is more alive than it's ever been.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's ridiculously alive.
Yep.
Rap music is incredibly alive right now. Barbecue culture in New Orleans on the second line. No one even talks about that. Like, I'm like, there should be a thing called Louisiana barbecue at this point.
Sure.
Because there's so much fucking barbecue culture
that's completely going on, unique to
that's
the
completely
city.
Unique to the city. Yeah. Right, exactly. And like, and that is a more recent kind of, I'm not saying it hasn't been going on, but it's codified itself into
only get a boned in rib sandwich in New Orleans.
Super fucking, God, are you kidding me?
It's the only place you can get it.
With two pieces of
bread.
Wonder Bread.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a bunny rib.
Bread. Wonder Bread.
Bunny bread. Yeah, exactly. Bunny bread, rib.
Bone in.
Right, exactly. So my thing is, like, when you look at certain aspects of what's happening in the city, if you get away from the bywater and shit like that, which like people get distracted by because of stuff that happens outside of New Orleans, and just forget about that for a minute and go and engage on a more traditional level man, there it's there.
And that's kind of what there. District D is all about, to a large degree.
Oh, District D is like,
that's where it happens.
That's the home.
Now the question is can it can that, like, obviously, like, you know, because there's always been that discussion of whether New Orleans is changing, and it is, obviously.
Of course.
But I think to your, you know, point is that I feel the same way. You get away from, all right, Ferret Street, or you get away from, you know, Frenchman Street.
Oak Street.
Well, Oak Street kind of was Oak Street, right? It's been kind of doing the same
thing. Oak Street
thing.
Is just like, in its own stasis, you know, like,
I mean, it kind of stayed,
has been for a long time.
But Oak Street, like, in that
Carol, but Ferret that Carrollton flipped over, like, Ferret flipped over quick.
I think Oak did too.
Well, that's because of, well, Oak has an overlay. It's what they call an overlay, you know, the city planning overlay thing.
Yeah,
Ferret flipped over, but the thing is that none of the clubs lasted. There's only that's it.
Huh.
There aren't any other music clubs on Ferret Street at all right now. Now you asked about certain aspects, whether I'm optimistic, and I am. But what I'm not optimistic about, and that we should talk about, or anybody that's listening right now, is this, is that and I've said this a million times, incubator clubs where musicians need to go when they're beginning and starting out, whatever form, type, and variety of music it is that you play, are under attack all over the city. Mm-hmm. Threatened to be shut down. And I'm not talking about down on the hipster quarter, down on fucking on St. Claude and those clubs. And I admire what a lot of those clubs are doing and everything. I'm talking about people
in the neighborhood.
The future of this city and any scene that happens in the future has been in the past, will be now, and will be in the future. People who are from this area that carry it forward. And those people need someplace to play regularly all the time that is not the street. They need a place to play and perform that is somewhere in between the street. And a lot of bands can't play on the street because they play in an amplified way, and that's in between that and like Tipitina's.
Yeah, it's kind of like
and those venues are where it all happens.
It's like they're
almost always been that way.
Yeah. If it can't happen organically, it's almost like you say that stuff, and I'm thinking about like that Notes for Notes organization, which is clearly something completely different, except for the fact that it's in the music industry. And Notes for Note folks is in like 16 cities, including New Orleans, where they're in the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. And they allow kids who have any kind of music ambition, be it being a musician, being a producer, a director, whatever, music video management, whatever it is, they create custom curriculums for every single kid, right? And they've got 150 kids in New Orleans, they might have 1,000 kids in Nashville, right? And it's basically like, get the kids off because street culture and street music is so alive here in New Orleans, people don't know what it's like to be in a studio. And that's what Notes for Note does. So to your point, it's like, there also needs to be incubators for live music performance.
Yeah.
For up and coming
musicians. Well, that just happens in corner bars and stuff inside neighborhoods.
That's where it happens.
And that's where
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Gets pummeled when people move in and all of a sudden go, oh my God, these guys are
playing. It's become a real struggle to think about where those places exist. Mm-hmm. And I don't count, it's not anything against people that I know on Frenchman Street, but I don't count Frenchman Street anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Because it's outside of that realm now.
Yep.
Frenchman Street has become Bourbon Street Light. In a way, and I'm
what
not
is it,
saying
like a Chickiwawa would fall into your sort of maybe.
Well, this would be they're like kind of halfway there,
like Banks,
but it would be more like Banks,
yeah,
or it would be more like Bullets,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah. Those are the kind of places that I'm talking about. Now I can only pull.
What was that place on Orleans?
The other one I think of is Le Bon Temps, and they kind of fell off, but now they're back, you know. Mm-hmm. But right now, I used to be able to pull out. I could pull out. You know, 10, 12, 15. And that's why it's not a names of places like that. That's why it's not a get off my lawn kind of thing.
Right.
It's like an actual real decline.
You know, Dan Weiner has a band that they do like Grateful Dead type music.
Sure.
You know, Dan Weiner.
Sure.
His old aging bodies.
Yeah.
Guess where they play? La Bonta.
They play at La Bonta.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Right. And it's not just about, like, I mean, those bands like Aegyo Jubilee, too, you know, like, we need a place to play. But I can tell you this, that, like, I've seen this in, like, 6, 7, 8 different times where somebody, like, puts the money up, gets a joint, and, like, back in the day, used to be able to, like, fucking, you know, like, we spent 4 years unpermitted, and we had a bunch of musicians come in and play, and then we got our permit.
We got our shit together.
And we got our permit.
We got rid of the ice chest. We brought in the actual cooler.
Because we were doing, we were doing music regularly, right?
We got some plumbing.
But here's what happens now. You get it, and you're like, I'm going to have some bands play, whatever. And then immediately some neighborhood group comes in, shuts you fucking down,
the NIMBYs,
puts
man.
The fucking NIMBY shit on
Jeff,
you.
Jeff, what do we do about the NIMBYs from a political perspective?
Like, well, I mean, one thing is this, is that we need a city council person who is stridently in favor of incubator clubs for musicians throughout the city of New Orleans.
Yeah.
That we need that written into the master plan as a preservationist aspect.
Oh, I love it.
For the city of New Orleans. Because preservation, as the Macno people have pointed out, is not just about buildings. It's about music and about other shit as well. And it needs to be couched within the framework of
preservation.
Of preservation. Right, exactly. And those incubator clubs that are so important to the fabric of the city are the things that I don't see anymore.
And you know what's crazy, and I don't know if we talked about this on one of the pods before, but like I remember like in the 90s, and I know it goes back to the this asshole's about to talk about New Orleans in the 90s, but I remember
we do that a lot on this show.
I remember being able to bounce around the city. So you would like nowadays, you have uptown people and you got downtown people. I mean, they always had that, but like before, it was like you kind of like you might have went to Cafe Brazil on Frenchman, and saw something, and you bounced.
And that was a real incubator club at the time.
Incubator club, and then would go to like the Mermaid after that, like because you was going to see a friend play, and then you might go to the Audubon, go there, and then go eat at the Hummingbird. Like, it was like you bounced around. It didn't feel like you never really was like, oh, I'm on, you know, St. Claude or I'm on Frenchman.
Now it's like, I don't cross Canal Street.
Yeah. That would never really cross your mind. Like, you would just kind of bounce around and kind of do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you had
those like places. The Bridge Lounge.
No, like, Bridge Lounge. You said Mermaid?
Mermaid.
Like, Mermaid.
And you would go see the new
Showcase Lounge.
They had like those series of warehouses where Twiropa eventually were. But they were just like renegade kind of spots where you would go to
Dr. Steve.
Oh, no. And they had the Warehouse Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. They had that for a while. And so point being that they had these places that were interspersed throughout the landscape of the city that you could go to, and I can tell you right now,
in the
90s,
you did drive around a lot more.
I can name like three that you can do that at, and out of those three, two of those three that I can think of have been under fire from neighborhood groups.
Which one?
Like, well, certainly Le Bon Ton has, and Bank Street has caught its share of flack as well. So like if Bank Street Bar went away in Mid-City as a music venue, the entire Mid-City other than New Orleans East is probably the single biggest neighborhood in the entire city of New Orleans, right? You wouldn't have one single venue to go and see music in Mid-City in New Orleans, which is crazy. When you think about it, right?
Yeah.
Not a single place that you could.
Tyler's used
other
to
than
bands,
no, it'd be like Chicky Wawa, and the only reason why is because Chicky Wawa like caters to people who are like, "Are you done by 11 o'clock? Oh, that's great, that's so wonderful."
And
you know, this New Orleans model.
And they're on a thoroughfare.
And they're on Canal Street, right?
So there's not a lot of residential stuff right around them.
Yeah. I did see a place that, you know, if y'all, you know, Randy, if you want to talk about it or whatever.
Yeah.
I saw this joint, man. You know, it's right over there by that new brewery. The one on Broad.
Yeah.
I saw a place right over there that I was like, oh.
Good good spot.
I saw it the other day. I was like, that would be the bomb.
You just call it the incubator.
I call it the incubator. Right, exactly. We need that, man. We need a joint.
The Nolabator.
We need a joint. Well, okay, all right. I'll add one other. That's creepy.
We don't want to put Nola or Florida Lee anywhere near.
Thank you, Randy.
I'm sorry. I'm doing disrespect.
I've been having this conversation with people.
I'm doing disrespect to Dave Clemens because the Circle Bar is the other one.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so exactly. So there's like four.
I mean, there's other ones, but the thing is, it's not as
why do I have to think so hard, you know, to pick these places out? Like, I want to go to a mermaid. Yeah. Again, you know, somewhere, because I just want to go see like some interesting band that happens to be hopping through town or a band that's local.
Get a drink from Wendy.
Yeah, and get a drink from Wendy. Right, exactly. You know, so we need that. We need that in New Orleans. And that's the part that I see needs a lot of work.
So music right incubator now. And... museum.
You know, just thinking about it, since I guess I'm in your district, I would like to see some development on Franklin. There was a series of really good New Orleans restaurants over there, and there are a couple back. There's Fiorella's is over there, and Gentilly Cafe, I believe, is over there.
Oh, you're talking about down this way, by the lake.
No, by me. But they used to have Vasquez, they used to have a grocery that had really good Cuban sandwiches and deli and stuff like that.
And then they had a bakery.
Then they moved into, they had a bakery. They moved into a building, and then the owner was killed by an employee right before Katrina, and then Katrina took it. And then,
I remember that.
And now it's that building is still vacant. There's a couple of buildings in that succession of houses that buildings that were knocked down, and so there's really not anything over there anymore.
How do we incentivize small businesses to go into to places that have meaning historically?
I don't necessarily think it has a historical meaning, but I think the thing is that you have a strong middle class base over there, and there's no places to eat. If you continue down Gentilly and you go under the train tracks, there's like Wendy's and shit, and there's like, you know, you can go eat Popeyes, or there's a Cane's, but like on the other side, you know, they just opened up like a seafood place called the Bowling Pot, and there's other spots in the area, but that used to be like a little.
It was a hub.
And now it looks. I mean, you ride through it, and it's just, you know, knockdown buildings or vacant buildings, and then there's a couple of restaurants. I would suggest go check out Fiorella's; it's delicious. I think it's the original family.
Maybe we do some work. We partner with some local banks, like the Gulf Coast of the world, and we figure out through the city, like with like government secured loans or something like that, where we incentivize small business owners to move into underserved neighborhoods where there are people who have money to spend.
Yeah.
And we try to make it risk-free for everybody. I mean, off the top of my head, I think something like that could work. That's the other thing, man. We can't forget about our local banking community when we think about how we're going to get together in sort of a coalition of people to try to improve New Orleans from a business development perspective. Our local bankers have to be involved in that conversation, man. We can't shut anybody out.
No, well, you know? I mean, yeah, you have to. Yeah, the world revolves. Got to have money to make stuff happen.
And I mean, that actually happened too. Win-wins. Well, I mean, think about it too. That corner, what is it, right by UNO, they used to have the Checkmate Lounge. And then it was like they had a comic book shop.
That was Elysian Fields and Leon C. Simon.
And they had, over there, they had a large comic book shop. They had a dry cleaners. They had like a framer. Like all, and then of course they had like a Wendy's and some other stuff over there. And then, you know, Katrina took it all away and it never came back. And it's just a field.
Yeah.
It's an empty lot. And it's like, the thing is you got a university with 30,000 students right next door. And then, you know, you have another university.
14,000.
Is it 14? I thought it was 30.
It's so diminished.
That sucks. Anyway, but you got SUNO on the other side, and you got a whole community of folks that are actually what we would, you know, are probably the more affluent people in the city, or at least in the top third. Sure. You know, I mean, they're, yeah. they're not the uptown silk stocking.
Yeah, people crowd, have money to spend around there. Yeah, you know, it's like,
and all you got is a Popeyes and a Wendy's and a gas station.
It's a legit middle class. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure.
So I mean,
they just need that checkmate back. To come back, oh, man. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. We need a checkmate to yeah. come back.
Or the Bacchus Lounge.
That was it. The Bacchus Lounge is like, I mean,
the Golden Cue.
They use it. Yeah, the Golden Cue. Right, exactly. But all right, so yeah. we're at like 50 here again.
Oh, wow.
You know why? Because whenever Perez is on the show, well, it just time flies.
It feels like
man.
5 minutes.
So I know. It's like yeah. nothing.
Well, right? I also like to ask questions. So.
But you're a top class conversationalist.
I appreciate that.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely. Well, folks, all right. I think that we've covered everything we're going to cover here on part two.
How about plugs for Randy? What you got? You got
nothing right now. No, nothing. Anything? We kind of parking that for a second.
All right.
I mean, we're going to get it back together, but you know, okay. I'm basically focused on that move.
Look out for you in Gentilly, though.
Just hollering.
All right. Sounds good.
Plugs for Jeff.
Wait, we gotta
plugs for
man.
Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean...
Summertime.
It's summertime, so things are slow for the Egg Yolk Jubilee, our one and only sponsor. I think it's a good light, babe.com.
What record is that?
We're working on number 5
yeah,
right
but what,
now.
What record is the open? That's a pretty catchy tune.
Oh, that is not on any record, actually.
So it could be like a free download, maybe?
That's our Mardi Gras tune right there.
Yeah.
No, but it is on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could buy it.
That's our Mardi Gras tune. Oh, yeah. Okay. So buy that, folks. Yeah. Show your tits. Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly.
That's what it's called.
Yeah. It's called Show Your Tits.
Nice. It's an explicit podcast.
Oh, okay.
And look, plug myself one more time, VoteJoelJackson.com. Check me out. If you like the platform and you got an extra $5, look, if you get $35, man, I got soft-ass tees, Randy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm probably going to do American Apparel, but maybe somebody else. But I got soft-ass tees.
They'll be delivered on October 27th.
JJ.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, dude, it's coming out, bruh. I found my printer today. It's JJ for DT.
Wait, you got a local printer? Or you going
yeah, local.
Okay.
Yeah, totally local. Right over here in Mid-City. Screen printing NOLA.
Oh, okay.
That's what they call it.
All right.
They do hats, they do koozies, they do everything. Shout out to those guys.
Yeah.
Devin's the owner. He picked up the phone. He guided me through the whole process. So I got...
All right, yeah, so you got to do your little three-color separation.
If you give $35, you get a T-shirt.
Nice.
And then I'm going to stamps.com. That's how I'm going to get them out. Stamps.com, everybody. Jeff, you got a dog out of the week to finish the show?
Yeah, I do have a dog out of the week. HBO Go and HBO Now.
Yeah, why do you got to have two different
Why apps? Do you have two different fucking apps?
Come
man?
On, HBO. You're better
I don't
than
understand
that.
Why you have two different apps. ESPN has one fucking app. ESPN, watch ESPN, right?
HBO is great. And HBO Go is great.
I understand.
What the fuck is HBO Now?
Look, here's the thing. HBO Now is like, you can watch. This is all because of Game of Thrones last night, right? But HBO Now is like, it's the app for what's on right now on HBO, right? Which is so stupid because then the marketing people were like, no one is going to understand the difference between HBO Now and HBO Go. So there was some power struggle at HBO, which resulted in
HBO
these two apps.
One.
Right. And HBO Go, like last night, I did the research and I'm like, wait, is Game of Thrones going to be on simultaneously? And they explicitly were like, Game of Thrones will be on simultaneously on HBO Go at the same time that it's on HBO Now. Well, what the fuck? Why would you need HBO Now if you got HBO? It doesn't
HBO
make any
Go
sense.
HBO Go is on demand.
So I'm not dogging out HBO Now or HBO so, Go. I'm just dogging out HBO Now.
It doesn't, dogging out the marketers.
It doesn't make any sense.
Look, just admit you made a mistake and get rid of the Now.
Just get rid of that. Exactly. And just put the component of the Now into the HBO
Go.
That's all you got to do.
And HBO Go, you can say, watch what's on right now.
Live stream.
But exactly. But that's all you got
to
do.
Right. That's all you have
to
do.
Come on, people.
But is it a regulation thing?
No.
No.
It's a marketing problem.
No.
But I mean, can you...
It's an LA problem,
dude. Can you pay for just... ESPN, like
someone like Suzanne made that decision, bro.
No. Here's the thing. What they're trying to
think
do
about the
with
idiots
it,
that you know in your life.
What they're trying to do with it is they're trying to say like, I think is that they're trying to say the premium of being able to watch something in the immediate moment is worth a subscription. So you get the HBO Now app and access to it when you get the cable running to your television, the hardwired cable to your TV.
Yeah,
but
Randy,
what I'm saying is I'm wondering if that's coming from the cable subscribers, like Cox and like...
No, some marketing fuck up. Some internal.
Because, I mean, can you have like...
Like Showtime doesn't have two.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
No, some internal marketing fuck up.
Showtime's got one.
Because look, man, you can go to HBO Now and watch Game of Thrones when it starts, or you can go to HBO Go and
watch Game of Thrones
30 seconds after it starts.
30 seconds after it starts.
And then right. 90 really? Minutes after yes. it starts, an yeah. hour after it starts.
And all of the marketing for HBO indicates that that's available to you. So you're like, you're just like scratching your head going like, why are there two fucking apps, man?
Come on, HBO, look, we love you. Your apps are the best. Of, I mean, in terms of like the casting, they're up there with Netflix. They're up there with
Netflix.
I mean, it's really
strange.
Those two together are the best casting apps.
That's right. Yeah.
Period. Yeah, so totally. Good on you. But
wait,
your marketer,
what? You think?
Your marketers fuck some shit up.
What do you think is the best what, casting like, app?
Do you do casting? Mm-mm. See if
where,
you cast.
Yeah, where you got like Chromecast or you
oh,
got Roku.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, no, no. I got Apple TV.
Yeah, that's same casting. Thing. That's yeah. casting, yeah. right?
But like Netflix is trash. Like it's garbage.
That's
like
not been my experience.
No, it's just like it's the same few like I look at like if you look at
oh you're talking
no we're not talking about content.
Oh, okay. No, but I'm also looking at
we're talking
no,
about
that's what I'm talking about functionality. Like so if I go and look at horror movies, right? Or if I look at you know, suggestions for you. And then I go
no,
through
I
them.
Agree. I agree.
And then it goes
that part I agree.
Trending.
I agree.
And then you look at it and you go, yes. what's new? And yes. you look at a yes. film that's on
no.
what's new.
No, their navigation
and it's been
sucks.
On there for no. six fucking months. And it's not.
No, I agree. I
mean,
it's
that's
it's the
terrible.
Weakest part of the
and,
whole
and you,
Netflix.
And not thing. Only that,
yes.
not only
the
is,
casting works though.
Well, their aggregated metadata and what they say that they know about you is so fucking weak.
Well,
man.
It's weak, and it's also like
they
you,
don't
you
know.
Look at Amazon.
Oh my God, little man. Part two.
You look at Amazon, right, or HBO, and you could watch the trailer. Netflix is supposed to be the king of the fucking the hill, and they don't have you can't look at the trailer.
Only on very specific shows that are about to come out. They had one that they put out on. I hear what you're saying.
I'm talking
you're
about.
Right.
I'm not talking about
you're
about
right.
to come out.
Yeah.
Like a teaser. I'm saying like, oh, look at blah blah blah.
Oh, the what's coming on next week
yeah,
or whatever. Yeah.
No, no, no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying hey, you, like if you click on if you're on Amazon and you go, hey, this. Fucking X-Men movie. Never heard of it. Oh, I wonder what it's about. You click on it and it puts up a synopsis and you could click on the trailer and
yeah.
literally watch the trailer.
Yeah.
Like if you look, because half of the movies, if you're not watching original content that was bought by Netflix or produced by Netflix, 98% of it, you're like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this like, you know, like,
it's wanting.
You know,
it's wanting.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like
yeah.
it's like who that wait, that's a chick that was
and
like,
they have so much fucking money too. That's the other thing. Like when you read about
first world
problem. Nobody can understand you when you have the microphone that close to your mouth. So it's just like muddy, echoey shit. But it's but they don't yeah, I get it, man. I mean you know how many people it's like 800 million people subscribe to Netflix.
And there's like two movies on it that's worth watching.
800 million
no,
times
the movies suck.
800 million times $8.
Yeah.
You know
no,
what
it's
I mean?
It's crazy.
It's an incredible amount of money and they can't get their interface right.
No, it's terrible.
The actual streaming
works.
Handles it really nicely.
Fine.
And it's fine.
But I have no problem.
HBO has a little bit of a problem with that, with the buffering sometimes.
But it's not. Yeah. It's not really that big of a like. It's not noticeable. Like,
yeah,
and it's the same thing with Amazon. Like Amazon, because it's and I heard they might have worked out a deal with Apple TV. But in order for me to stream my Amazon Prime through my Apple TV, I do it through my phone. So it's like literally you connect your phone to your Apple TV through a mirror,
right.
But it plays flawlessly. And it's
nice.
So much easier to search for fucking movies and like, let me watch the trailer. Oh, wait, I know what this is about.
No,
oh, I can
totally.
Search it. And I don't
yeah.
have to go click, 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 like trying to get through it. It's
yeah,
actually
yeah,
got
yeah.
a keyboard. Yeah, and you type it up, you're like, oh my god, this is awesome.
I hear you. They need to change that shit. It's a little weird, man.
Dog out
of it. The other part that I would just say, I know that we keep going on about this, but here's the thing. The other part about it, but this
I'm
is
passionate about this.
Dude, this is relevant to people. People do this shit all the time when they watch TV these days. But the other part is that Netflix has this rotating in and out door of movies that they own and don't own. They own it and they don't own it. They own it and they don't own it.
They lose it. They license it and then lose it.
They license it for a brief window. So here's the thing. If you go back and you look at the 2016 movies on Netflix that no one has heard of that are great, right? Which is the kind of shit that I'm interested in. Because I just want to dive in and see if there's something cool to see.
Yeah.
You read that list from 2016, those movies are all gone.
Oh, yeah.
By the time you search it this year, they're gone.
Oh, yeah.
You can't find them anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they Blockbuster back in the day. When I used to work at Blockbuster,
which
could
one
rent,
did you work at?
I worked at the one that used to be Alfalfa.
Oh, yeah. But where was
on
that?
On Robert E. Lee.
Dude, I worked at that
one. You worked at that one?
No, I did. I worked there for 3 years.
I was there, man.
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. I was there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But they did that when Blockbuster took it over. The first thing they had us do was they were they gave us a list, and it was every movie that I liked, you know? And they're get rid of that. And I was motherfucker, man.
Every Woody Allen film.
There goes Alfalfa, man. Yeah. No, Alfalfa had good movies, man.
Well, the whole model for Blockbuster was to funnel everybody to the new release wall. And the thing that's the problem
and
with
Christian and shit.
No, you know what else? You know what's funny is that's probably one of the reasons why. Well, I mean, there's a million reasons why I failed, but it had declined before even this digital stuff started happening. But my biggest problem with them was they never made a movie experience. Like you go to some of these. Like I went to a couple of mom and pops. There was one in Oregon where you roll in and there's a million of The Man with One Red Shoe trailer playing, and then Godfather posters everywhere, and they're popping popcorn. And you walk in, and you get excited. Not only did they had that, you could literally rent any video game from the history of renting video games.
Yeah, right.
So you can go in right now and probably rent a regular Nintendo.
And they had an unembarrassing porn section.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
completely unembarrassed.
But they would also have
a nice curtain.
Yeah, they had the little curtain. You had to go in there, man. Major Video.
Major Video,
Major Video had great titles.
They had a lot
of
good stuff, yeah.
They had good shit. Yeah. Yeah, they were fun.
But you walk in and you're damn, I wanna rent a movie, not Stallone has this thing where he's a mountain climber and he's being chased by, I don't know, Russian spies.
No, there were certain video stores that were
I guess I'll watch that. But
Rennie Harlan movie.
No, there were certain movie stores that were going in a record store in the sense it was almost a sense of discovery.
And it gets you hype.
You get hyped because they were curating.
Yeah.
So they were it's kind of the Netflix thing, if you like this, but they would do that in a cool way. They would do here's your whole Woody Allen section.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or this is what this kid that's, got a mullet and acne is listening, he's watching these 10 horror movies right now he thinks you should watch, but you're not cool enough to watch. You know what I'm saying?
But that's what happens when you own a business that's not beholden to stockholders. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. It's they're not just axing everything. They're there's enough space in here for Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
And whatever other movie.
And every movie that was influenced by that.
And you had that.
The Harold and Maude section.
Or they have an art section, and you go see some freaky shit, Vampire's Kiss, or some shit like that.
You want to smoke this type of weed for any of these movies.
I don't know where I pulled that out of my ass. Anyway, we're at about $1.03.
Yeah, we gotta get the phone.
Guys, all right, folks, that's it. Part 2, episode 56. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We figured it out.
It's in the books.
That's right. I'm not ready with the echo every single time.
That's why.
If it had an automatic trigger, that'd be great. Do it one more time.
It's in the books.
Catch up with you next time, folks. See ya.